You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Okay. Hello and welcome to Matt Meets the Music Industry. Here I am today with my good friend and esteemed associate, Anthony Blaney of Your Mate Bookings. How are you, Anthony?
Good, Matt. Thank you so much for having me on, and I hope you are well as well.
Let's talk first a little bit about what you do. You know, can you break down what Your Mate does, what you've got going on down under?
Yeah, for sure. We do a few things. Basically, management of bands, booking of bands, and promoting / touring of bands. And that's, you know, that's a combination of international and local. So we book or manage international and local bands, and we tour and promote international and local bands as well. So that's, you know, that's basically what we do. In terms of the genres, you know, we sort of go in and out of a lot of different genres in the heavy scene. But in a nutshell, that's basically what we do.
How did this start? What's the comic book? I don't think there's, like, you and I have like hung out quite a bit and have to speak on the phone fairly regularly. Sure. But I'm still not actually sure how you got initially involved.
Yeah, okay. It's a funny history, but basically, being in and out of bands for years. Let's start from the beginning. So basically, I was in a hip hop band. Yeah, in 1985. So I was in a hip hop band. It would have been like something like 36 now. It would have been like 2021. So let's just say, you know, 15 or so years ago, in a hip hop band. And I joined this band, and I decided to, you know, basically find us gigs. And it just grew from there. So I was booking all our shows for my hip hop band. And you know, from there, I just got more and more involved in, you know, the artwork side, the venue side, and eventually, obviously, ended up quitting that band a very long time ago as well. And I got into more of the management and booking of other bands that I wasn't in. So having first-hand experience in my own band helped me, obviously, use that knowledge and bring it to other bands in terms of what they should and shouldn't do. And, you know, because I've been the guinea pig in my own, you know, experiment, basically.
Yeah.
So that's sort of where it all started. And, you know, what's happened along the way is, you know, it's been huge, like to the point that I'm now booking or managing up to 16 bands. You know, sort of a lot is domestic, or, you know, Australia, New Zealand, and then I've got a few sort of bands around the world that I sort of work with, and that's, you know, basically on an exclusivity level in terms of bookings for Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, and that's been, up until the pandemic, that's been pretty successful.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that the touring was very successful up until, you know, February, March, 2020. However, the booking agency has grown like massively since then, because I've had the time to focus on domestic acts, which has been a really good learning curve for me, because I've had to be, you know, sort of the guy that guides every single step of the way for some of these bands in terms of, you know, how to promote a release, how to promote a tour, what the scheduling is going to look like, how the marketing is going to sit, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, becoming more involved with these bands is sort of, you know, sort of somewhat, I suppose I've got so much, I'm so indebted or so involved in the tour that it's like, well, this is my tour, and and this is my bread and butter right now. So it's my best interest to put every single bit of effort I've got into making it a success. And a lot of them have been, and I've been able to keep my head above water, which is absolutely incredible. You know, not trying to toot my own horn, but I couldn't have done that before, you know, and I didn't have the time to do it. So it's good that I've been able to, you know, basically put my sweat and blood into, you know, the local scene.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you were talking about the touring being successful pre-COVID. What do you think made these tours so successful? What makes the tour work?
Okay, well, preparation of every single, basically everything that makes a tour happen, including accommodation, flights, you know, visas, marketing. Look, I'm just going to talk about this generally, and this could be domestic and international, but, you know, all those items along with, you know, gear for the bands to use, you know, set times, the right bands playing. So basically we're impressing the crowd. We're not just chucking some bands on because they're available. You need to make sure that the, you know, the crowd's going to be happy with the actual whole event. So all that in preparation for go time, you know, go time, show time, where, okay, have all those things been addressed? Have they all been locked in? Because now's the day we go on tour, and now's the day that we're hoping for those last, you know, handful of tickets that are going to sell on the door to get us over the line. So it is going to be a success, or it is going to at least break even, that sort of stuff. You know, then you've got the obvious, you know, things that sort of get left out sometimes by bands just for, you know, lack of whatever, but merch, you know, merch is so damn important. And, you know, if bands are taking the time to basically put together the right artwork and even market that pre-tour, you know, they can have a pretty successful tour that actually, you know, sort of either breaks even or at least profits, so then they can use that money to record and do whatever else they have to do after the tour. Does that answer that question?
It does. Well enough? It does. So during the pandemic, you had a post that went pretty viral, basically talking about breaking down the profits on a show.
Yeah.
And why you were raising ticket prices to not even, I forget what you were raising ticket prices to, but especially considering the Australian dollar, it was pretty reasonable, I thought. Can you talk about that? And why you're raising ticket prices?
Yep. So what did you want to know about that? Sorry.
Well, just like break it down, because there was a really good breakdown you did there. Can you explain why ticket prices need to be raised?
Man, I'm not a banker anymore. I don't remember these things. No, so basically, you know, I think just for years and years, and I'm talking like 10 years plus, it's just been a sort of, would you use the word staple? I don't know, just like people just expect, oh, I'm just going to pay $10 for a show. And, you know, whether that show sells 100 tickets, whether it sells 20 tickets, whether it sells 150 tickets, $10 is just, it's not enough for an event to be sustainable. And if you consider, you know, all the factors, all the time, all the money that goes into that band actually playing that show, and that's just not just the band, it's the marketing, it's the sound guy, it's the venue hire. There are so many costs that go into actually running the show. At the end of the day, no band should be walking away with, say, you know, $100 from, like, you know, where you fill a room of 100 to 150 payers. Like, it's just like, what the hell? Like, what's $100 going to do for that band? Like, what are they playing for? So, I mean, the breakdown of, you know, individual costs, I'm not going to get into the actual dollar amounts, but you've, as I've highlighted before, you know, soundy, marketing, postering, PR, the bands themselves, you know, what they should be paid for their time on there, for their time playing, whether it's 30 minutes or 45 minutes. Then you've got their, you know, the obvious cost that they, you know, sort of pay every week, including rehearsals. Then you've got the poster. Who's going to make the poster? So it's eye-catching enough so people want to come to the show. You've got to pay an artist to do that. You've got to pay for the printing of that. You know, and, you know, there's still so many other little bits and pieces, including, you know, accommodation, petrol, all that sort of stuff. It's just like $10 was just not enough. Like, it's just, it's not going to help the scene sustain.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even, it's not going to grow at that, you know, level because bands aren't being paid their worth, which means they're not going to put the sort of, you know, the energy back into it. With you know, what they deserve. I did do two posts, actually. Funnily enough, I did one at the start of the pandemic and I did one about earlier this year that went viral as well. And, you know, there were really, there was, you know, out of, for example, say 500, 600 likes on these posts, one of the posts got to 1,000 likes. There was only like, you know, maybe one or two negative comments among like, hundreds of positive comments saying definitely put those prices up. It's really important that bands get paid. It's just, you know, enough's enough. And, you know, when I'm putting hours and hours of marketing work into my shows, you know, along with all the admin work that goes with it, it's just like bands need to be paid. And if promoters are professional enough, then they need to be paid properly as well, you know? So, I suppose that says it all.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And it's interesting to see it. It's interesting to see the popular opinion slowly start to shift and start to be okay with that.
Yeah, man. Now, like, you know, I did a show earlier this year in Melbourne, and the headlining band, like, they walked away with, they're a local band. They're not huge, but they walked away with, like, you know, $1,300 from one show, and it wasn't even a launch.
Like, that's like 200 American dollars.
What's that?
It's like 200 American dollars. No, it's actually probably more like 800 for 900 for. But I'm just letting American listeners know.
So yeah, but like for example,
in their head.
That's a good. That's a good amount of money to walk away.
That's fucking sick. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So you would say, even at the box office, the raised ticket prices are not, you know, at the ticket gate, raising the prices has not negatively impacted you.
No, definitely not. If anything, it's, I mean, obviously the lack of international talent coming over here is, you know, zilch. So, you know, that's helped sell the tickets because people have nothing else to do. But it definitely hasn't negatively impacted bands or myself. And if anything, that you know, people know what they're getting and they're willing to, you know, fork out the cash to pay for something of value.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, I think that's important. You know, I think in America we had a similar issue, and it really happened a few years ago that it really started to shift, where it's not shifted everywhere, but like we went from a $5 show to a $10 show. And that was like a thing. Right. And it's like now that we have $10 shows, like suddenly shit's a lot easier. You know, because $5 shows have been a staple since like the 50s.
Oh man.
You know?
That's insane.
But yeah, like up until like not that long ago, if I booked a show for over $5 in Philadelphia, like at like a punk spot, people would be mad.
Wow.
But you know, I think those things are shifting, and I think we're gradually getting people to be like, oh shit, you know, $14 for a show, like okay, like it seems worth it.
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, obviously there's going to be bands that still, you know, undervalue themselves, whether they're good bands or bad bands, I don't know, but you know, I like to think that when I do a show, it's like, well, yeah, you're going to get a quality band. They're well rehearsed. Yeah. Their music is, I suppose, original enough, and it's, you know, it's avant-garde enough, for example, in some situations. For you to pay this, they don't play all the time. They don't play every week at, you know, for free, or, you know, for a few beers. Yeah. It's just like, that, you know, they put a lot of time and effort into their craft.
So how much do you want, like what kind of radius are you looking for on a band who you're putting on a lineup, like in terms of time?
Yeah, so generally it's about, I suppose, 40 to 50K radius maximum. But then, again, there's bands that, you know, for example, start in Sydney, then they'll move like regional, but they'll have that mm-hmm. fan base in Sydney. So that's okay. You know, you can sort of make an exception there. But, it's generally, you know, if I'm putting together a lineup, you know, what I like to do is have like one special, maybe an interstate band or regional band, and then mm-hmm. the rest of the lineup would be local.
Sure.
That local crowd or that local sort of catchment is really important.
I agree.
For events, it's so important. And like, you know, dare I say this, you know, sometimes I've brought international bands over and you've had to get local bands in certain regions, and it's just like, well, yeah, that's the quality you're going to get, but you have to go with the local bands because you need that local catchment.
Yeah.
And I didn't say too much there, as you might have noticed.
No, absolutely. But that's part of the, you know, like, and that's sort of the final thing I want to talk about to you about is like, you have to take a bigger risk than basically any other agent when you're bringing a band to Australia.
Yeah.
Right. Like what, you know, at what point are you willing to take that, to roll those dice and be like, okay, it's worth bringing this band over?
Look, I suppose, you know, after my first few international tours, I gauged the minimum cost of running a tour to either break even or make at least enough money to get me through that month. So if I'm at least breaking even to the point of, you know, paying for food on the table for the next month, I know that if I love the band enough and the sort of the profit margin is that low, I'll sort of run the tour. However, you know, with my experience over time, it's helped me realize, you know, you do things for the love and you do things because, you know, you need to get by. But you still have some love, you know, inside that tour or whatever. But you're asking sort of what, I'm trying to understand exactly what you're
like,
asking.
Like, like what makes you think a band is ready to be brought to Australia?
Yeah, look, I've got my own little techniques or little strategies that I use to figure out whether the shows are going to be viable here. So I sort of do a bit of I do a bit of digging around in terms of, you know, word of mouth and asking people, oh, do you know this band? What do you reckon? All that sort of stuff. Then I chucked some stuff online as well, sort of, yeah. And tease the idea of the band coming out here. And that helps me understand what sort of offer I'm going to throw at the band and how viable the tour is going to be in regards to whatever offer I'm throwing. So, you know, for obviously for bigger bands, it's going to be like, okay, well, this is what we're offering you because this is what you're definitely worth. Whereas bands that are very unknown here, you know, you're sort of going to have to, you know, somewhat sort yourself out, but I'll run your tour for you and I will help you grow your name out here to the point that, you know, tours are very viable for you here in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that helps.
That's a weird balance to have to strike, but it's hard.
Yeah. Look, that's the thing of, you know, you've got to be in the know and you need to be, you know, you've got to have your ear on the ground, and you need to be in the scene, knowing what's going on, what people are listening to, you know, who's going out, and what venues are they going to figure out exactly, you know, whether the band's going to work in Australia and New Zealand or not. You know, like some of the tours we've done, for example, like we'll do Australia and New Zealand, and New Zealand's basically just broken even. But, you know, the band's really happy because, you know, they've gotten to another country and they've, you know, they're sort of, you know, they're, yeah. They're catching another fan base over there. However, like we've done it for the love, basically. It's like we're helping you over there. Like we're bringing you all the way. We're going to go over there and we're going to help you at least, you know, grow your fan base there.
Yeah, which is awesome. And that level of passion isn't something we see that often at your level. So it's good.
Yeah, definitely, man. Appreciate it.
Do you have, as we head towards the end, any like final points or like big projects you're working on you want to talk about?
Oh, I'm more than happy to talk about it. So just before the pandemic hit, I'd sort of hooked up with Matt Skip Sanders again. I'm sure you're aware of Matt Skip Sanders from Damaged, King Parrot, Sadistic Execution. He's worked with Steve O'Malley, a lot of bands. Anyway, I hooked up with Matt again and I started managing Matt. So he's been highly involved in the extreme metal scene of Australia and the world, I suppose. But since then, I've been digging deeper and deeper into the metal scene again, because that's where I came from. Like that's where I first fell in love with music, heavy metal. So I'm working with a lot of at the moment. I'm reaching out to a lot of sort of death metal and other extreme metal bands, because I just it's where my head's at the moment. And I speak the language. I know the sound, and I know what, you know, these bands want, and you know, I know the fan base well enough out here. So I'm working with, sorry to give you all that backstory, but I'm working with a few bands to bring out here. One is Skeletal Remains. Another is Jungle Rot. And another from your country as well, Capra. So metallic hardcore band Capra. So I'm really happy to be even venturing into that hardcore scene, because I hadn't done any hardcore stuff for a long time. Like I used to go to hardcore shows a lot, but anyway, since managing Nicolas Cage Fighter, who's now signed to Blacklight Media and Metal Blade,
That's a great band. Whoever like signed that is a really smart guy.
Yeah, I'd say so. They made the right decision there. Through hooking up with Metal Blade and Blacklight Media, I heard this Capra band, and you know, like this new album's absolutely killer. So I'm going to be bringing them out here and helping them grow their fan base, and you know, doing the double tour with Nicolas Cage Fighter. But there's some of the projects I'm working on. There's a heap of psychedelic rock stuff that's in the pipeline, that's been in the pipeline for a long time. But that's the stuff that I'm really excited about for now, because I'm just in this massive death metal binge that I just cannot seem to get off, which is a good thing anyway. So whatever.
There you go. Thank you so much for coming on, Anthony.
Thank you for having me on. And I look forward to seeing you when I can see you.
I do too.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living. And every week, I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others. Photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici. And I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.